Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. And today's program starts now, and my guest is Mark Steiner of Gig Salad. Now, Gig Salad has connections here to North Carolina. They have an office in Wilmington where all their technical magic goes on. And Mark is their CEO and has experience as an actor, a talent agent, and it's his personal experience of matching talent to available gigs that originated Gig Salad. So, Mark, tell us about how you just decided this was the answer.
Yeah, thanks, Leah, first for having me on in that introduction. And that is really the summary of it all. I went from being an actor, the starving artist, because I frankly was not very good, so I was a really, really starving artist. And then I got into the booking world. I got out of the movie business and got my first job booking big bands and jazz artists and nostalgia oldies acts back in 19.
Let's drop a few names there, because I saw some pretty interesting names there in your bio.
Right. Well, for the right demographic, they'll recognize names like Glenn Miller Orchestra, Tommy Dorsey Orchestra, Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Les Brown and his band.
I think all of us should recognize those names.
You'd hope so. Yeah, I think if you're a music lover, then that music should resonate with everybody. But that's what I started with. I was not particularly familiar with it, other than the record albums that my parents had in their collection. But I, had an opportunity. A friend of mine thought I would be pretty good at cold calling or getting on the phone with past clients and trying to broker dates. And sure enough, I was. I really enjoyed it. I had a passion for it. I have just enough ADD and compulsiveness about me that I set these pretty high goals for myself in terms of how many contacts I wanted to make in a day and a week. And I did that for 7 years working for this small boutique agency in New York City, and then I started my own booking agency. And it was at that time that I had my a website created by my friend Steve Tatro, and he was a graphic designer by trade and was starting to dabble with web design. So he designed my first website, and it was after that, once that website was up, all of a sudden, the phone started ringing, emails started coming in from artists and entertainers, bands and musicians from across the country that I think were just, starting to use search engines to find opportunities, and I was coming up fairly high on that. And I always tried to be really helpful with those people, wanted to do what I could to pass on some advice, but it was not my business model to be developing and discovering and working with an established artist. Mostly what I was doing at that point was middle brokering national touring acts and celebrities and speakers. But I always wanted to be helpful because, as I said, I was that starving artist, and I just thought, from one artist at heart to another, I wanted to encourage people to keep doing what they love. But I really was, it was this situation where I then had to just send them on their way because I didn't have opportunities for them. At the same time, I was getting contacted by local event planners, brides looking for DJs and wedding cover bands, and moms looking for balloon twisters and face painters for their kids' birthday parties, and country clubs looking for jazz combos for happy hours and brunches and such. And I thought, okay, here's these two separate parties on either end looking for one another, but finding me, and what can we do about that? So I went back to Steve and we started conceptualizing, what is this going to be? What can we do here? And at first it was just a database. It was just a directory of names that we thought, well, hopefully one another will find each other that way.
Right.
The event planners will find them, and that's what happened. Just it took off, and here we are at almost 80,000 members across North America. This week we'll hit our millionth event planner.
Oh wow! Congratulations.
Thank you, thank you. And that's and that was that that information, that data, we didn't start collecting until much, much later in the game, unfortunately, to our chagrin here. But we do a lot of bookings through the platform every day now.
Well, I know I was telling one of my colleagues and friends last week that you were going to be on the show, that I was interviewing you this week. He said, really? He said, I use their stuff all the time. I got a clown and I got a jazz group and I got this. And he says, we use it for work and we use it personally. And that's just, you know, that was just so great to say. He's definitely tuning into the show. And it's so exciting to know that you saw that opportunity of, this group needs this group, and then you found a way to connect them. And so what was the challenge in then rolling out that model and then taking it to the next step and getting people – how did you really funnel them then into this tool as you developed it?
The biggest challenge from the beginning was Steve and I doing this remotely at the time. This is back in 2001. I started my own agency. And Steve was, you know, web designer, and Steve was a web designer, and that was had a you know an agency of sorts there, but he was in Rhode Island, and I was in Connecticut, and we were both working out of our homes, and it was more than a hobby. We knew we were building. You know, we were going to build this thing.
Right.
We'd had these other companies to, you know, provide our, you know, was our bread and butter, and that's how we lived and survived. But, you know, I moved to Connecticut in 2004. Steve decided to move to Wilmington, North Carolina a year later. And it was figuring out how to do this while, you know, through a couple of phone calls a day or through emails and
right,
things.
Right, because you really didn't have as many tools. Like today, we just take it for granted. We can remotely connect and use different tools to do it. But that would be a big logistical challenge.
Totally. And it continues to be. And as I'm glad you mentioned the tools, because things like Slack and other communication platforms have helped us a great deal. But to, you know, as you mentioned before, Wilmington is where our developers and programmers and design has traditionally been done, and Springfield, Missouri is where everything else is. So we consider that the headquarters where, you know, the administration is, and our customer happiness team and our marketing team and on and on. Well, being able to work together, you know, from one department to the next has not been easy, but here we are. We've, you know, with the help of some good counselors and advisors and people that have taught us how to create systems and how to work together, even amongst that challenge, we've done it. And beautiful thing, Lee, is we've always grown. We have been really, really fortunate that we're in this very niche industry and have done really well to live within our means. As a bootstrap company, we've done it without any, you know, no debt. And always been profitable, and that's been actually an advantage to us. I think is being in the Midwest, low cost of living, and really just living within our means has been you know, our strength.
And so you self funded this. You said you worked out of your houses at first in 2001, and so mm-hmm. all along the way, the owners, you and your partner, funded this
right
development until you had the operational cash.
That's exactly right, and then we kept working our jobs, our day jobs. You know, while we had this day job, but we all the way up until 2011. It wasn't until late summer, July and August of 2011 is when Steve and I, respectively, you know, I folded my Steiner Talent agency into the Common Interest of Gig Salad because we kept doing bookings,
right,
and Steve. The next month, you know, ceased to be doing web design for his clients, and but it took all that time. We were putting every dollar we made back into the company, hiring people and growing. And we purchased a building in 2007 when we officially launched, because we knew at that point we had outgrown our homes. You know,
right.
I had So yeah, we and it wasn't very much money. I mean, it was, you know, a couple thousand dollars maybe in the beginning, and maybe a little seed money along the way, but it wasn't as significant as you would think. It was just, we immediately got adapters. We got people that were engaged and willing to buy in, and I just went into my Rolodex and said, you know, went to the people, entertainers that I knew, and said, hey, we're creating this thing. Would you like to be a part of it? And we actually offered a lifetime membership for some ridiculously low amount, and still have a lot of those people with us. I think about 40 people jumped right in and said, we trust you, go for it. And here we are. So probably one of the best investments ever for these people.
Well, and that makes an interesting point, is that you're focused on a very narrow niche.
That's right.
But it has the potential, in that it's matching talent. But
right.
Yet there's 300 million people in the United States that have activities that, once they know about Gig Salad, if they have a 16th birthday or, you know, an anniversary party, they're getting married, they're you know, a VP of a bank planning an event, you can pull in from so many sources while focused on what seems to be a very narrow niche for your customer base.
That's right. We were one of the early creators, I believe, of the job industry, or the, you know, there's of course, you know, Monster, and but then there was Angie's List, and so this gig economy we've been doing for a really, really long time. It wasn't until these big Silicon Valley companies were created, then now all of a sudden people are talking about the job economy or the gig economy, and we've been doing it in this niche world for some time.
14 years at least.
That's exactly right.
But it's an interesting blend of a jobs model and almost a match.com, right?
So yeah.
Because it's got the personality aspect of it too.
That's right. Yep. If we're just talking about people to people, those are the two great examples. And then again, more recently, you have places like Uber or Airbnb, and that's what we do. We match somebody that has one thing to somebody who wants that thing. But ours is always people.
So what have been – so logistics and communication while you were building the tool, what have been your other challenges? You didn't have to go out and raise funds. You had a plan apparently to grow slow and steady based on what you could sustain internally as you generated revenue. So what other challenges have you had?
I think – fear, to just basic humanistic fear that who's going to come along and maybe do this, try to – do this too. We stayed below the radar for quite some time because we weren't the first ones doing it. We thought we were, and then all of a sudden discovered that there was others. I just thought that back when it was SteinerTalent.com that I must have been the only talent agent in the entire country, because I people were doing searches for, you know, talent agency or booking agency or hire a cover band, and I felt like I was the only site. I must have been the only one coming up in those searches because of how frequent I was getting these phone calls and emails from people. But once we started to do it, it was, okay, listen, we have to create a great product first and foremost. Let's create a great service. And Steve and I, that's the basis of our companies before, where it was honesty, integrity, forthrightness, service to our clients, having their best interest at heart. And surprisingly, that was something that within the industry is often lacking. And we wanted to go out there and help. I wanted to help artists. I really did. And by doing so, I was essentially putting my booking agency out of business, because I'm saying to them, listen, you don't need representation necessarily. There's lots of great representation out there, not to say anything about agents or managers as a whole. But what's often the case is these artists go from an amateur level trying to break into become semi-professionals or professionals, and they think they can't do it unless they have somebody out there representing them, getting them the work. Because they think it's a right side, left side brain mentality, that they just don't have the capacity to be good business people. Or two, they want to focus on their art and not have to make cold calls and try to get work. But I was saying, listen, until you establish yourself, until you have a following, until representation can look at you and say, yeah, you're viable. I think I can work with you. You have to go. You have to be the person that does both those things. So here we've created this place for you to do it. We've made it as automated as possible at this time, and go and use that. And that was really helpful. While doing so, we were, again, there isn't a lot of people doing this thing. And so it wasn't until probably the past 3 or 4 years that we finally started to get some. Well, it was right around 2011. We thought, okay, if Steve and I can make our living from this now too, then we must be doing something right. And we were getting really good feedback from the consumers. And I think a little bit of that fear subsided. I think good healthy fear to some extent is good, keeps you honest and on your toes. But I think for a while there it was just, feeling too timid to want to promote ourselves too much. And, you know, we didn't do marketing to speak of up until 3 or 4 years ago at all. All of our growth has been pretty organic. You know, people finding us through strong SEO and word of mouth. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we started wrapping vehicles and driving around the country and handing out T-shirts and doing some of the traditional marketing and advertising things that companies do.
Well, and I noticed that integrity, that customer focus. You mentioned a customer happiness team versus a customer service team.
That's right.
So it kind of manifests that in that attitude that you're spreading throughout your organization.
Correct. Yeah, first off, we're an entertainment company. We are not curing cancer. We're not rocket scientists. We on the one hand, don't take ourselves too seriously. I mean, as it being in the entertainment business, we want to be letting people know, hey, we're having fun. This is kind of a cool thing. And I feel really fortunate to get to do what I love. I love this industry. I get to do it in the Midwest in Springfield, Missouri, which is not the hub of entertainment. And so we have fun. We've done a great job of creating a really fantastic culture of people that also love what they do. They're working within their strengths. And so when people call, it's really nice to already have a person. Gig Salad has a personality. At the beginning, it was Steve and I signed every email, you know, Steve and Mark and Steve. It was he and I that
right.
People were connecting to. And now we have this, a lot of younger, more attractive people that they can be. It's just we have these beautiful people that when people call, they're calling somebody that they've already talked to once, and they feel like there's a relationship there. Even there's friendships to a great extent. People, when they're passing through the Midwest, they make a point to swing by Springfield, Missouri to come into the office to say hi. So it's special.
So how did you choose Springfield? You're pointing out you're in the Midwest, the heart of the Midwest, basically. And that is not traffic central for booking gigs, right? It's not
No.
the first place people would think of. So how did you make that decision?
Oh, like ways a lot of people do, through marriage, you know, relationship. I was in New York. I'm a Jersey boy. I grew up there, 18, I moved into New York City to be an actor, work in the movie business. And it was while there I met my wife, who was going to Manhattan School of Music. She's a violinist. And so we got married. It was March 23rd, 1991. It's 25 years here in a couple of weeks.
Congrats.
And thank you. And in 94, we moved to Connecticut. So we lived in Connecticut from 94 to 04, and then said, where do we want to live now? And chose her hometown. And since then, my sister moved there from Jersey. My parents moved there from Florida, and we're all together.
Well, and it makes an interesting point that quality of life is as important to the life of a business as it is, you know. So, yes, you could be at the crossroads of all the entertainment industry, but that's not necessary when you're looking for quality life and you can harness technology and connections.
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely do. And Wilmington is also very idyllic, sort of, it's a beautiful place to live. Steve and I have, you know, said to one another over the years, had we not moved to one or the other places first, we might have I could have easily seen myself in Wilmington. Again, look, sort of, you know, not, it's not, it's not the Northeast, certainly. It's not California in terms of cost of living, and there's talent there, not always as easy to find because they're just that much more in demand and fewer of them.
Right. Because we've had, North Carolina has a lot of film industry activity going on, so it's an interesting place to be, too.
That's right.
So when we think of growing the business, you've been at this essentially 15 years. You've had these major milestones of putting your headquarters and your tech centers where there's quality of life. The business is still growing. So 2012, your staff doubled. You've introduced a booking platform. 2013, you passed 1.5 million leads to performers. You've had 1 million event planners, I believe you said.
That's right.
Use your system. So what is the future looking like, and what's your plan for continuing the success? And is it a formal plan? Is it on a napkin, or is it just in your head?
Yeah, I've never been a really good student. I'm not. So anybody talks to me about business plans, I start to get the heebie-jeebies. It just freaks me out. Sometimes I have to really say, okay, here's the goals, or here's what we're shooting for, folks. But we know in general terms. Well, where are we going from here? What's going to make this? And it really is just, it's volume. We have 584 categories on our site. And so, for example, I think we got one statistic that there's 150,000 wedding photographers out there in the world that put that on their tax returns every year. So with that, and that's, we have that category. So with 80,000 total people, and that's just US.
Right.
We're just skimming the surface. We are, you know, the sky's the limit. We're it's so scalable. We want everybody who's planning an event, and we happen to believe everybody in this country, everybody, you know, is a potential customer. We really do believe that, because everybody's going to celebrate a birthday or celebrate a birthday with somebody else, for somebody else. You know, most people are going to get married. So, you know, there's anniversaries. So from cradle to grave, there's funerals, there's corporate events, on and on and on. And we really do try to promote ourselves as a lifestyle company. We want people to think about entertainment more often. You know, they're going to have a dinner party or a backyard barbecue. Why not hire a mariachi band or a flamenco guitarist to sit in the corner and play for half an hour, 45 minutes, just to add to that ambiance for the cost of it all. It's fairly inexpensive, and for the memory it creates is really something. So it's more members on our site. You know, we hope to have 100,000 members before the end of the year, certainly. And as far as the event planners, I think we certainly hit more than 1 million a long time ago. It's just that we can verify 1 million, and that's what's going to happen this week. And it's more and more and more and more. It's making sure that as we find more event planners, we always have to find more event planners than we do members, because if our members aren't getting leads and aren't getting bookings, they're not going to be happy. And we won't have the retention that we have, and we won't have the people that are buzzing about us and, you know, wanting to sign up.
So how are you approaching that need? How are you going out and finding the event planners and that kind of things? What kind of strategies are you using to reach them?
Our fantastic PR firm that's directed us to you, Leah. This is one. We do a lot. We're doing a lot more promotion and PR. And as I said, we deliberately stayed under the radar for a long time, and now we are, you know, at being more proactive about getting our story told. We're on the road a lot. As I mentioned, we have two vehicles that are wrapped with our logo, and teams that are going to conferences, conventions, and trade shows in various industries to promote us there. I'm talking to you from Houston, Texas right now, and I'm heading in a couple days over to South by Southwest, where we'll be for our third year in a row. you know, we do a lot of going out and meeting people. It's really easy as a technology company to think, or to have a technology component to our event entertainment business, to think that everything can be automated, that you can just sit behind a desk, push buttons, create tools and such, and expect people to find you, or hope people are going to find you. Whereas for us, we're going out there and we go to town to town, and we do meetups with our existing members, and while doing so, building more of an alliance and allegiance and a loyalty to one another. We're at the same time we're inviting new people to come out and talk to us before they decide they want to use us. And by that, you know, we find that people are a lot more likely to use us once they've met us.
Well, and that's an important point, I think, for the listeners to understand, is that you're leveraging, one, the personality of your firm, the personality of the entertainment industry, and the practices, that sense of community and the connections and the word of mouth and everyone being there. And so I think that's important for any business to understand, is that they need to take 80% of your business may be like everybody else's, but that 20% of your personality and how you want to do business is what's going to make the difference to success.
Right. I agree entirely. I'm a show business guy. I love big and grandiose, and I don't mind being that person. That's why I think I was a great booking agent, and my friend saw that in me before I saw it in myself. I loved getting on the phone and talking to people and building relationships with people from all over the country. And in fact, to this day, have many, many, many people that I were clients of mine that I consider friends now. And yeah, I think that anything that's worth and has value is worth getting out there and talking about and being able to stand behind. And when people are looking you in the eyes as you're describing the service that you give and how much joy you get from helping people to do what they love, it resonates. I mean, it's true, and it's true to a person, to each person at our company, that we really do love what we do, and we feel very fortunate to be able to provide this platform to allow people to do what they love. And and it's the end user that, you know, we know that we're creating great memories for, that whether it is a funeral or a wedding or a child's birthday party or their parents' 50th wedding anniversary or a corporate event that an administrator had to put together and didn't know what they were doing but found Gig Salad and found who they were looking for and used the system and found it to be really a very easy experience. And in the end, you know, their boss is coming to them and saying, "Great job! That was really fantastic." And you know, we play a part in each one of those and take a lot of pride in it.
Well, I know in reading over the material of what's been going on with the Gig Salad, you know, I loved the part where one of your flyers says, "Quit your day job," right? And you're talking about in that, there's a story in there about Austin Ellis, who was on The Voice, and I think a lot of people will recall the name. Can you share his story and how he's interacted with Gig Salad?
Yes. Well, you know, he found us after his experience on The Voice, and we just kind of stumbled across him when we had a need to have a – we were putting together a we partner with CD Baby, and last year we did the first musicians do it yourself DIY conference in Chicago, and we were going to have some speakers on a panel with me talking about how to get work, because it was the audience of, you know, 1,000+ musicians, and Austin was one who was able to come and talk very authentically, truthfully, about his own experience. And he, you know, referenced that he had made a significant portion of his living from Gig Salad leads alone. And so that was an easy one, you know, because it's he's obviously a very, very talented person, but we have a lot of really, really talented people on the site. And yes, they sometimes come to us from a very amateurish beginning, and they're learning as they go. Some have been semi-professional, full-time professionals and decided to jump into Gig Salad to just continue to help to supplement the income or find additional leads. And there's a lot of people in between. And so there's a lot of Austins out there. He happens to have a face and a name that was recognizable. So that helped a great deal. And he's a really charming guy. He's a great guy and a super talent as well.
So when we're talking about the talent portion of this, and is there like an age minimum? Can somebody that's 14 and has their own little garage band list themselves, or do they have to be over 18? Those kind of things.
No. It's like other platforms that are marketplaces. We rely heavily on reviews, and so once you've created a profile on GigSalad or PromoKit is what we call them. You know, you put your picture up there, multiple pictures, and you hopefully put video, which is, you know, what people want to refer to if they have not seen you live. Once you've created that, you know, written in the content and of accurately representing who you are and what you do, at that point, our consumers, those end users, the event planners, rely heavily on what other marketplace platforms provide, and that's reviews. So what has been the experience for past event planners that have booked this person? And that's really the what differentiates one from the other. We have everybody from student level who are, you know, and we have some very, very, very talented students that use the site, both on a high school level and younger. Many, many university level and conservatory level musicians that have not quite broken into full-time professionalism yet, but are doing it while going to school. And then, of course, your adults who are doing this either as weekend warriors or are doing it and making their entire living from doing this. And we rely a lot on reviews. We encourage that. And like booking anything or hiring anybody in your life, you know, you want to like the person that you're communicating with, get a sense of trust that they're going to deliver what they say they are, and then hopefully be able to refer back to some form of a referral or reference that they've provided on their platform that says, yes, I've hired so-and-so. They showed up on time. They didn't show up drunk. They did what they said they were going to do. They're very talented, on and on and on. And that's the way of the world now. We're buying more things off the computer than ever before. And all we can do is do our due diligence and then review that product or service once it's been delivered.
Well, and again, that kind of gets back to the heart of what Gig Salad stands for. I loved your Gig Salad manifesto: under promising and over delivering, creating exceptional customer experiences, listening intently, giving input, criticism, and praise, taking the high road. I mean, that's not the things you typically see on a for profit's manifesto, right?
That's right. No, it's not.
But it also says working hard, taking risk, enjoying the resulting profit. And so I think the fact that you can marry those two things together, and it's coming across very obvious that you don't work a day in your life because you love what you do.
That's right.
Right. And so if you can
very
create,
fortunate.
Yeah. If you can create that environment for your team and for the customers that you're serving, that's just, you know, over and above and spells, you know, one of the key ingredients for success now in the world that we're in, because people are looking for that integrity.
Amen. You said you're hired, Leah. If you didn't love what you were doing, I'd say come join us.
Hey, as a business consultant, I'm always for hire.
Okay. Well, I'll call you after this call.
Okay, sounds good. But, I mean, it's very important, and that's what I always say. I work with values-based businesses to make sure that they're doing what's right. They're leveraging what they're really good at, like your entertainment persona, that personality of your business. Every business won't have that, but they can develop a personality that's authentic and consistent with their business and their market. And then when something goes wrong, that will carry them forward a good ways. But we also need to fix the business parts that don't necessarily work. So I always have to ask the guests, what things did you try and didn't work for your business? because I think those are as important as the things that did work.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting and difficult question, without sounding pompous and arrogant. We have approached things pretty measured. You know, I'm a huge risk taker. So of the three partners, I'm the gambler. I'm the one who says, let's roll the dice and we can do this and come on. And then Steve came from a much more conservative approach. And then our first developer that we hired full time became a shareholder in the company, because after he worked for us for about 6 months, and then all of a sudden we realized, oh, we can't keep paying him. We don't have that much money.
Okay.
So we said, hey, stick around for, you know, each month we'll give you X amount of equity in the company. So we have this minority shareholder lock, and he's even more conservative than Steve. So it was, he's, you know, very slow, very meticulous, you know, trying to create perfection in what he does. And for me, I was always like, you know, wanting to act like we were, you know, had gotten a bunch of VC and could do anything anytime at any speed. So I was like always cracking the whip. Let's go, chop, chop. We got work to do. And why isn't that done yet? And it just didn't work that way. And so I learned patience. And I learned that the good stuff rises to the top, the cream rises to the top, and, you know, wait, and the time will be right. And so by that, we didn't make a lot of mistakes. There's things that maybe we could have done sooner, but in terms of, I just feel strongly that what we've done and the time we've done it and the means by way how we've done it has been pretty good. You know, there's been once or twice where we launched something and got a, you know, what we would consider a negative response to it. But even in the grand scale, you know, I think at that point we had 50, 60,000 people, and we had maybe, you know, it was certainly less than 50. I was going to say it was less than 100, but I think it was less than 50. And it might have been a couple dozen tops that just were not happy with what we had done. And, you know, when you look at it from that standpoint, you realize, okay, first off, you're never going to – not everybody's always going to love it. But we, you know, we really do stand behind the stuff that we've done, because we've never done it from a greed, you know, this is going to make us richer. It really is what is best for you, our members, who in some cases pay us to be listed on the site, because we have a freemium model. There's free members and then a couple paid levels. But knowing that it's that end user that we have to make happy too, and we're trying to provide a service to them. So whereas you might not like this decision we just made, trust us. In the end, we believe more leads are going to come to you, and ultimately more gigs. And that's all we want, right? We want everybody to be working. And so I need to work harder on thinking about that answer, because I get that question, you know, often enough.
You give me a good answer, because it points to the fact that more mistakes may be made by, say, the risk taker, or on the other hand, somebody that moves too slowly, that's too conservative, may miss opportunities. So the fact that you have a mix of leadership there, that you're going to push them to not go too slowly, and they're going to kind of rein you back so that you don't go too fast.
That's
a great balancing act between that, because when I'm working with businesses, sometimes I will see everyone, it's on the conservative mode, and everything has to be perfect, and no product ever goes out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, somebody's out there, like you said, spending, like, you know, the VCs gave them $100 million, and they barely have $10,000 in the bank.
That's right.
Right? And so it's that balancing act, and you being blessed to have had this come together with that right balance for being bold enough to move ahead, but conservative enough to not make too many missteps.
That's, yeah, we, and for as polarized as we were, if that's right, we were definitely two ends of the spectrum there for a while. We have collectively come to the center, and in at times and moments have switched roles. And I've been the one saying, whoa, pump the brakes. We're not going to do that today. That's crazy. No. And it was, you know, our really conservative developer Locke, who was like, no, it has to happen now. But, you know, I do believe we've communicated really well. It's not been always pretty, but it's never been entirely ugly. And we've always come around to being able to, at worst, agree to disagree on angles and things, but never to the detriment of the company, never to the detriment of our personal relationships. We respect one another. I think we respect roles really well. We were pretty loosey-goosey for a long time in terms of who did what, who had what title. Steve and I deliberately were not interested in titles for the longest time, and then got some consultants in there that worked with us some and helped us to realize some of that's good, but, you know, it's not good for everybody, and some people like to know who is the boss and so on and so forth. And we've done some things that don't come naturally to us, but once we've adapted them, we realize this works and it's good for everyone.
Well, and it's that balance between being an entrepreneurial, no barriers type of organization, and then as you become larger, the structures have to become somewhat apparent, but they don't need to be silos and brick walls that says, no, this is my area, you can't step into it. Right.
That's right.
It's finding that balance, because, you know, we look at a 3M who is very entrepreneurial and no rules for so many years. That's how we got post-it notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they started losing that, we haven't had any post-it notes for quite a while now. So, you know,
right. It's
finding that balance that keeps your organization entrepreneurial, responsive, energized and growing, and yet having the disciplines and the structures, the infrastructure and the operations that allow that still to happen, but still keep you on the straight and narrow with your budgets and your plans and all those kind of things.
That's right. Yeah, I agree. I've not been one who's been really had a lot of structure in my life. I I'm an artist as much as I'm a businessman, and but understanding that that's not good for everybody. You know, it was getting to the point where we just to know that we had to have the right people on the bus, and once there, making sure that they were in the right seat, and then knowing that everybody's different. And we, as I said, we have a really terrific culture, and I believe that started with Steve and I and our friendship. But knowing that we're different, you know, Steve and I are different, and we're different from the people that we've hired and this team that we've formulated. So how do we make sure that everybody's number one has a voice, and of course everybody feels valued and is able to contribute to this thing. And I think by that is how we got here, that we respect one another. We have what we call the luminaries chart, and we refer to each of our team members as a luminary, and we expect them and want them to live up to that. These 10 items of who we think we should be as people, and I think for the most part we all do a really good job with it.
Well, and that's getting to that values and aligning your organization to be consistent from you at the top owning it and running it to every person along in there. So how do you measure performance in the organization? How do you guide your team to make the right decisions and live that manifesto?
We've trained one another to not just make sure that they can manage themselves well, but that they manage one another well. It wasn't until a little bit later, until we had titles and such, that we actually started putting management in place, having people directly oversee another person. But even in that, we expect the style to be with a tremendous amount of grace and humility, to, you know that none of us are great at everything, that our strengths and weaknesses should be complementing each other. And whereas, yes, we're getting to the size where we need to start having people work within teams, and within those teams, maybe there's somebody who leads that team. But it's finding the people that are the A players, the people that are all in, really, really love the company, love what we do at a level and in a way that is, you know, just it's different, and then calling everybody else higher by those people's example. Because once you find people that are all in, they feel an ownership, then my leadership becomes really, really easy at that point. All I have to say is, hey, listen, this is not about me. This isn't the Mark Steiner show. This is about you. This is as much your baby as it is mine. Are we creating something awesome here? And if so, if you see somebody that's not, you know, pulling their weight, simply doing their job and striving to do it well, has it a great attitude while they do it, help them along. Let's find out. And we've had, you know, we've seen people come and go. I've had to fire people. People have decided to, you know, to move on, you know, and of those people, the ones that have moved on, I've never known it to be because they simply were not happy at Gig Salad. They got another opportunity to maybe do the thing that they were ultimately born to do, the thing that they, you know, their dream. And it was very different from Gig Salad. But my point is that the culture and the way that we've approached it has been that to a person in our company, they really are doing the thing that they are supposed to be doing. They do what they do really, really well. We've had to shift and move people around occasionally to find that spot. And sometimes it's not been easy. And I've been on the fence with a person or two in the past 15 years. But, you know, I stayed with them. We stayed with them. And in some of those cases, they are our stars now. It's unbelievable. I'm sure you've experienced this, Leah, where you've helped a company or, you know, a person get to that place as you've coached them along, and you were just so glad that you never gave up, and they didn't give up on themselves, and they didn't give up on you, and now all of a sudden you got these rock stars, people that are doing better for your company than anybody else.
And well, it's people living up to expectations or living down to them, right? So in the corporate world, you see somebody tell them, well, you know, you never get anything right. Then, yeah, they never get anything right because they stop even trying.
That's right.
And so on the flip side, coaching, mentoring, and being – let's go back to your luminary strike. Your luminary leaders there are mentoring and coaching and saying, hey, you're part of my team. I want you to perform too.
Right. That's right.
So here's my favorite question to my guests. What three things stand out most over the 15 years you've been developing the company that are lessons that you would share with other businesses?
Okay. Three things that stand out. I found my way. I think in some ways I found my way a little bit later in life. The reason I'm attracted to talented people, those who are really exceptional at what they do, and in some cases, the very best at what they do, I've always admired them because I did not have that discipline and self-control from an early age to stick with something. As I said, I was not a good student. I was easily distracted. And I thought I wanted to be a rock star, a movie star as a child. And it was a dream. I wanted to be rich and famous. And I can speak to why I think that I wanted those things. I didn't come around to Gig Salad until I was, 35 years old or very close to it. And I'm going to be 50 tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome to the 50s.
Thank you. I am embracing it and looking forward to it I'm just so excited. I believe I'm at the best place I've been in my life. I have had the joy of doing what I love for 15 years. And so, and like life, I, you know, not every day in this build, in this building and growing has it been perfect. And yet I keep showing up. And I think that's as important as anything in life is just, you know, stick with it and, until there's something else, until it's really clear that you should be doing, going a different direction, whether it's a pivot within your company or if it's a pivot within your, you as a person, keep showing up. And so I do what you love, you know, do the thing that you're passionate about, that you love, and hopefully is your strength too. If it's not, make it a strength and discover if it's not a strength. I'm not sure. I probably said three things.
That's all right. So they're great.
So I'm not sure. I think it's those things. I just feel like I'm really, really lucky and fortunate. I've been spending more time as my children have gotten older. We made some family choices that have freed them up and provided some independence that have allowed them to travel with me. Go on business trips together. We turn them into, schooling time while also just having time together. And that's been really quite incredible. And I'm very driven. I'm very competitive. I think without knowing it, I've always wanted to stand out in some way in my life. And I've always wanted to be big and great in some way. I thought that was as an individual before, but now I'm doing it corporately with this company that I think is exemplary. I think it's a really exceptional company, and I think it's a really exceptional brand. And so, I've accomplished it. You know, I think it's no longer about a certain amount of money or a certain valuation. Steve and I have said for 10 plus years that if it all ended today, the journey, like we felt successful for a long time and didn't have two nickels to rub together, but felt like, look at us, like look at what we're doing here, look at what we've accomplished so far already. And so it wasn't about becoming a millionaire anymore. Although I've put it out there in terms of what I would love our valuation to be one day, by either by revenue or somebody, some entity looking at us and saying, yes, you are worth X. And so I kind of have that certain goals there. But beyond that, in the meantime, I'm having the time of my life, hopefully creating a space where my team is having the time of their life too. And all the while, we're doing great things for people.
Well, and I think you've made a really important point, because I think a lot of times business owners, even employees in businesses, measure whether they're successful in contributing by the paycheck or the valuation of the business. And the reality is the valuation of the business actually comes providing value from the customers. And as you grow that, the metric becomes how profitable are you or how much is your salary. But you don't focus on the salary, the profitability as the goal. It's serving the customers gets you that outcome.
Right.
And that's a really positive place to be in the business world today.
I agree.
Well, I want to thank you, Mark, for being on the show. And anything I can do to help in the future, you know how to reach out to me. And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things.